And it was on the drive back to New York City that I'm scrolling Twitter on my phone and I start to see these like pictures on my Twitter feed. So in addition to all the Shiba Inu memes, you started seeing crypto punks, like alien punks, you know, the zombie punks, the Bored Ape punks. And these things were still going for like 2 or 3 Ethereum. At the time, of course, having, you know, had the liquidity in Shiba Inu, I had the crypto liquidity and I faded every single crypto punk. Why? Because just like when I made the Shiba Inu investment, I was like looking at it from a framework of utility. So if Shiba Inu was building towards a DEX and that's what did so well, I chose to opt into the Bored Ape Yacht Club because they let me log in and update a pixel on a bathroom wall that everybody else could access that was a token holder.
Welcome to the NFT and Web3 Insider podcast, the podcast that gives the German-speaking Web3 space a voice. And we will dive into the exciting world of the evolution of the internet together. Today's episode is in English because I have a special guest on and you will find out about it just in a second. I am Fabian and here you find interesting practical use cases that reveal the potential behind Web3, NFTs, the metaverse, and AI. And my goal is to help you spot opportunities early and take advantage of this ever-evolving digital space. Plus, I bring you exciting personal stories from my guest, and today's episode is no different. Today, I'm thrilled to talk to James, aka El Mono, and he's the founder of the apparel brand Mono, and his story is one of the evolution from construction to Wall Street bets and Shiba Inu all the way to being part of the early Bored Ape Yacht Club. And you can really feel the early BAYC vibes in his journey. We'll dive into how the idea to founding this brand, founding El Mono and going into apparel basically and going into fashion came to place and what really makes Mono stick out and stand out in today's world, and especially how the Mono brand offers unique fashion experience for modern nomads. Without further ado, let's dive right in. Let's go. Welcome to the NFT and Web3 Insider podcast show. My guest today is El Mono. I have the pleasure to have you on board. We planned this for quite a bit, and now it's finally happening. I'm so happy, and we just talked about like missing each other, like ourselves in Tallinn at BananaConf. But yeah, now that's the magic of the internet. We can have this conversation here. So yeah, welcome to the show, man. So happy to have you. And for the people that don't know who you are, please introduce yourself. What are you doing? Who are you? And just like a short introduction.
Yeah, so you'll probably see me a lot on X and other socials as El Mono, Mutant Ape 14167, formerly known as the Bored Ape 2083. And I drank an M2 serum and I never looked back after I saw the art. It was, I instantly fell in love with the M2 tweet and just the whole M2 traits were insane. And you know, when I go to these conferences, like Banana Conference, it's always crazy to me to have people recognize me as El Mono and call me Mono. Because to me, like I always introduce myself first as James, right? Like that's my name. I'm fully doxed. I ripped that bandaid off a long time ago. And, right now what I'm working on is Mono. And we'll get to that here in a little bit, but, that's what brought me here today.
I think that's probably also part of this, right? So your brand is actually Mono and you're like, also your handle is, Mono, and I think that's it's hard to sometimes like tell the difference, or it's easier probably to just have just one name. I had the same problem actually. I started out like with my ape as a Captain Kazoo because he has a kazoo and it was in the captain's head and it was so natural to like call him that. And then with starting the podcast, I thought about like but yeah, how should I talk about, how should I introduce myself? Is it I'm Fabian? Is it I'm Captain Kazoo? Is it like both? So I still struggle with it. I transitioned a little bit to like having my name in on X and on the pod and doing like something with Captain Kazoo elsewhere in storytelling and stuff. But yeah, it's actually, it's a struggle, especially if you're out there, if you're doxxed. So what was like, maybe let's go back a few like days, month, years. what is your backstory? So how did you start it to go into NFTs, into Web3? What have you done before? So like, tell us a little bit about like the history.
Yeah, so I guess the shorter version is, you know, I'm formerly an aerospace and defense guy. I used to work for a company called Lockheed Martin. They're pretty big in the space industry. They're pretty big in the defense industry. One of their largest customers, of course, is the United States government. And so I really come from that sort of federal contracting world, specifically in space operations. And at the time, before I found that career path, I previously was working in the construction industry for like 7 years, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, you know. And you know, I dropped out of college after a year, and then, you know, found construction because it was just something to do. I really took pride in you know, completing something with my hands. We talked, you know, before we jumped on here about still writing pen and paper notes. I think there's a real tactile connection, and there's sort of a mind body thing for me about seeing something that I've created and knowing that it will be there and you know, at least until the next guy goes and touches it. And there's some sort of pride that I found in that work. But how does that link to Web3, right? So this is where it gets interesting. I was eventually told by an individual in the construction industry who I was respected very highly. We worked together for a bunch of years, and he's like, dude, what are you doing? Like you should be back in college. Like you're a pretty smart kid. You know, you got your whole life ahead of you. What are you doing? And so I was like, yeah, you're probably right, man. I need to be more serious about this. And so I went back into school, was looking to major in a construction project management role, and found in conversation with an academic advisor that it was very common for peers to select the management option. And to sort of go against the grain, I selected a computer information systems option for my degree program. And I found myself staring at a computer for just hours and hours. You know, after I would go to work all day, I would do my online classes, and I would just sit in front of the computer. And for anyone listening to this that has any programming experience or has spent any sort of curriculum time in that realm knows, you do it so much for work or for, you know, accomplishing X, Y, or Z task, you start to find ways to leverage what you're doing for fun. And so much like Vitalik Buterin, I grew up playing tons of World of Warcraft, and that was like, video games were always just a part of my life. And I one of the things that really helps when you're playing a ton of video games is Reddit. There's so many different subreddits and forums for specific community engagements. And that was really my first opportunity to find an online community that was into the same stuff as me. You know, you could network and talk with different people. And then, like, this was like 2019, 2018, getting into 2020, when you started to see certain subreddits pop up, like Wall Street Bets, around cryptocurrency, and then specifically GameStop and AMC. And at the time in the United States, right, I was still a student, so budget was not very, very high, right? Especially on a construction salary. But I was like, you know what? Let me take a few $100 here and start to try these games, GameStop and AMC options. And Robinhood was just, you know, hitting the market as a big deal. And so I was able to set up an options account, jumped into like all these trading forums, and suddenly, instead of video game communities, I was in like trading communities and gambling on stock options. And it was a lot of fun, but I lost every bit of money I ever invested into the stock market. So I just kept going though. I knew that there's a light at the end of the tunnel because people started posting their gains. You know, Roaring Kitty was doing his thing, and then I knew that there was hope. But when it happened, right, and this is I think like to me it was like a really stamped moment in history where Melvin Capital, the big hedge fund, went down because of the retail bets against GameStop, and everyone was saying, oh, it's going to go to the moon, right? What in that fallout people don't realize was on Reddit, they blocked the subreddit. They shut it down. At some point, Wall Street Bets went down. The official Wall Street Bets was taken down. I was online when this happened because I was spending ridiculous amounts of time on the computer. And because I was spending ridiculous amounts of time on the computer, I had already sort of built up some rapport with the mods in the server. Now, the mods, the few that I had contact with, and we decided that it was an opportunity. And we immediately spun up a new subreddit and called ourselves the official Wall Street Bet subreddit. I will not dox my Reddit username. That is top secret information. And I've since deleted that Reddit account. So good luck, internet. But what we did without knowing at the time was form our own alpha group of like, you know, thousands of users that thought we were the official Wall Street Bets. We laid out the infrastructure and we had the alpha group. And so in that alpha group, you know, I was already losing tons of money on the stock market. So when somebody started posting about this new thing called Dogecoin, I was like, I need to start learning about this. Right. So instead of stock market gambling, I was like, you know what, this Doge thing, it's a meme. It makes more sense to me for some reason. My brain just seemed to grasp it a lot better. And I found myself actually in profit. I was making money doing the Dogecoin thing. And I did that, you know, going into 2020. And you started to see these guys who had put me onto Dogecoin start talking about Shiba Inu. At this point, the official Wall Street Bets came back, so we lost all of our traffic. But I had already, you know, said, okay, I'm going to commit to this. I'm going to commit to the crypto life. I'm going to commit to the Web3. And I became the biggest Shiba Inu maxi and was just dumping every bit of disposable income I had into Shiba Inu in 2020. And I mean, for anyone listening to this that's aware of the Shiba Inu chart at that time, it was a very, very good investment at that time to be in Shiba Inu without knowing, right? It was just a dog token. Why did I like Shiba Inu so much, right? And this, we'll get there, but it does segue into the Bored Ape Yacht Club, right? So Shiba Inu at its core was, you know, it seemed to be ran towards the idea of a decentralized exchange, right? They wanted to build towards this thing called Shiba Swap. They wanted to create, a rebase token and leash that was supposed to rebase to the price of Doge. And I was like, okay, I need to learn what a rebase token is. I need to buy this leash thing and I need to get all this stuff. And so before I knew it, I just had this war chest of cryptocurrency that I had, you know, sort of on the back burner of my life, right? My personal life that had nothing to do with my academic career, which at the time had, you know, gotten me an internship offer with the Lockheed Martin company. And I'm like going through this life as like a normal human being, figuring out, you know, college and what I wanted to do. And I found myself with this Roaring Kitty level war chest of Shiba Inu tokens. And I did not want to say no to, you know, 7 years of trying to figure out a career, right? So I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna keep going. We'll keep the war chest on the side. And then the price swings started happening. So I watched I think at one point I watched a six-figure swing in my portfolio going down. And I was like, dude, I'm holding, right? So because that was the whole vibe in the community, right? It was diamond hand. And because I was such a maxi, I was like, well, I have to do it if everyone else is doing it. I saw what Roaring Kitty did with GameStop. And I felt like I had sort of a similar level of control in the Shiba Inu realm. And at this time, right, Bored Apes weren't necessarily a thing. As my personal life continued to progress towards my career with Lockheed Martin, I found myself starting in June of 2021. And prior to my official start date, I had taken sort of a sabbatical trip with my younger brother up to the New York, like upstate mountains in New York, specifically the Catskill Mountains, which is where Woodstock was held. If I don't know if you're familiar with Woodstock, it's like a big music festival. And so we stayed in like this really trippy hippie cabin that like all the Woodstock people had stayed in. There was like all the pictures on the walls. It was an Airbnb. It was phenomenal. And we we were like, okay, so James, you're going to go and start your career. At the time, my brother was working for HSBC. You know, he was already well into his journey. And he had the genius idea of taking a heroic dose of magic mushrooms. And I was like, you know what, dude, what's the worst that could happen? Like, I didn't think my life would ever unfold this way. So I was like, okay, let me do a little psychological reset and then see if this is really the journey that I want to find myself on. And so we had our trip, we had our experience, and it was on the drive back to New York City that I'm scrolling Twitter on my phone and I start to see these like pictures on my Twitter feed. So in addition to all the Shiba Inu memes, you started seeing crypto punks, like alien punks, you know, the zombie punks, the Bored Ape punks. And these things were still going for like 2 or 3 Ethereum. At the time, of course, having, you know, had the liquidity in Shiba Inu, I had the crypto liquidity and I faded every single crypto punk. Why? Because just like when I made the Shiba Inu investment, I was like looking at it from a framework of utility. So if Shiba Inu was building towards a DEX and that's what did so well, I chose to opt into the Bored Ape Yacht Club because they let me log in and update a pixel on a bathroom wall that everybody else could access that was a token holder. And I was like, that's gold, dude. Like, obviously these are going to beat punks, right? These punk things are stupid. It's like 8-bit art. I'm going for the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And I went berserk and I got as many Bored Apes as I could. I think at the time it was like 9 or 12 Bored Apes. And they were like, and here's the other thing, right? And here's the other thing. Just like there were alien punks and zombie punks and all these crazy assets, right, with rarities, there were gold apes, there were laser apes, like all of the grail apes were, you know, under 5 Ethereum. And I was like, those are cool. But the cool thing about, you know, Bored Apes, that I'm sure, you know, the crypto punks had their journey, but for me, I'll just focus in on my journey with the Bored Apes, was that it was about your identity. Like, this was who you can be, and a sort of a profile picture change. And so I picked El Mano, Bored Apes 2083, because that was the one that spoke to me the most. It was the tweed suit, fez hat, robot eyes, just a smooth purple background. Shout out to the Purple Ape Yacht Club. And I was like, that's it. Like, I didn't need anything else. So I bought El Mano. I named him El Mano because at the time everyone was starting to like have a ape identity, right? Like Captain Kazoo, for instance, or Sarah Stargirl, or, you know, Josh Ong. At the time, I didn't know Josh Ong was like actually Josh Ong. I thought he just made up that name. You know, Caped and Trippy was just like Caped and Trippy, you know? And so I was like, okay, I need to come up with a name. But nobody at the time was doing a Spanish name. And I was like, let me represent the community a little bit. So El Mano came out because it just means the monkey in Spanish. And I was like, oh, it's a perfect fit. So I became El Mano and I started, you know, celebrating all things Bored Ape on all my Twitter feeds, celebrating all things Shiba Inu. And eventually Shiba Inu, you know, started to tank off. But I was very, very lucky and blessed to have rotated very nicely into the Bored Apes. And so that started to go up.
Did you see it as an investment at that time? I mean, as you said, it's like you're all doing this on the side, right? And you're building up this pile of Shiba Inu, and it's probably in money terms something that really can like change your life as well. But you and I think it's a wise decision actually, just to keep on the path to like figure out your career, building that career. And I think so from this journey, My interpretation would be like, you, cryptocurrency is just another form of investment, right? I mean, you have some conviction, you see what they're building, you support it, but it's basically the transition from trading stocks to trading cryptocurrencies. With the Bored Ape Yacht Club, was it then also investment, or was it really the kind of utility, identity, or at what time, or did it change over the process? And especially in this period where you say, okay, Shiba is like going down, but apes are going up. How did you think about money at that time? I think that's also something that I personally struggled with sometimes, and I know a lot of listeners have. So what was your take on that at that time?
Initially, no, it was not an investment. It was me hanging out with the internet community and having fun doing it. And as we, you know, I remember we got back to New York City, and the entire car ride, I'm like, dude, you got to do this. You got to buy the Bored Apes. You got to join me in the yacht club. Talking to my younger brother, and he just wasn't biting. He was like, this is stupid. He was, you know, yeah, he's a credit analyst for HSBC. He was a banker, right? So, and he was a banker that managed risk. And so for him, it was like I was insane. And because he was so near and dear to my heart, and he still is, it was like, okay, I'll table this idea as an investment. But I'm still going to do it anyway, cause I love it. Like, I think it's cool. It's fun. And I'm like getting thousands of followers on X, just like from, you know, before being just James, it was like, you know, some guy. But as Almano, I can like really leverage what came to be sort of a personal brand. Where I think it shifted for me was when, you know, I think it was like April, that was May, going into June and July of 2021 after the mint, that the price started to go up. And then I was like, wait a minute, this might really go somewhere. And then they announced Dogs, the kennel club. And it was like, wait a minute. So now not only do I get the bathroom pixel, but they're going to give me like a free dog. And it's like a companion to the ape. So now this is like really, really cool. And it was at that point that I, you know, talked seriously again with my brother, and he's like, dude, all right, I'm in. I'll do this. Like, let's give it a shot. And so I got, you know, a kennel club for every single one of the Bored Apes at the time. The wildest, you know, Bored Ape story I think I have is that at the time it was, you know, full swing NFT boom. Everything was like speculation market. Everything's going to go up. Numbers were only going up. And you know, he's still in the yacht club today. He runs the Bored Run Club, BRC. They're doing a run. I ran with them in Hong Kong, looking forward to running with them in Lisbon, but it's just a running community in the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And at the time, Stone Dabu was reaching out to me, and we did an OTC trade of one Bored Ape for one Skull Punk. And nobody knows what Skull Punks are anymore. They're just gone, right? But at the time, it was like Skull Punks could be the next Crypto Punks, and Bored Apes could be like, you know, whatever Bored Apes could be. Bored Apes could die. But I was like, let me at least hedge my bets a little bit and get a Skull Punk in. So I got a Skull Punk OTC'd Bored Ape to, you know, Stone Dabu, who I later found out, right? And I don't know if this story has been shared before. I later found out that he had gifted it to his father, and his father was, you know, victim to some drainer scam. And so that Bored Ape is gone, like just never went anywhere. But, you know, I think there's tons of stories like that too, where people just don't know what they're getting into. So it's like, you know, is it an investment at some point? Yeah. If you hold on and the number actually goes up. But I think at the time I didn't really see it that way until we started seeing kennel clubs. And what really did it for me was the serums. When serums were like hyped up and mutants were coming, it was, that was the next big thing. And the idea that you could not just get a serum and mutate, you know, your ape, so that they gamified it and you could get an M1, an M2, or, you know, even an M3 mega. When I got my serums, I was, again, still holding a few Bored Apes. So I had the option of getting a few different serums. So my odds, I think, were a little increased. I had gifted, you know, one of the apes to my brother, and I had gifted an ape to my mom. And so I think at the time my mom got an M2, I got one M2 and a bunch of M1s, and then my brother got the M1. And so even though neither one of us got the M3, we were all still stoked. And I remember these M2 serums even went berserk on the secondary. So like some of the M2s were going for, you know, just ridiculous amounts of Ethereum. At the time, ETH was like almost 4K. And so, you know, my brother's really happy with me. My mom's singing my praises. And I'm thinking, wow, I really have diamond hands. Like, these hands are made of steel. Because I held through Shiba Inu, and I was able to roll it into the Bored Apes. Now I've held the Bored Apes into the dogs and the serum. And then, as if there wasn't like enough icing on the cake, Yuga was like, hey, we're doing ApeCoin. Again, going back to my personal life, this entire journey, I had converted my internship to a full-time offer. I had finished college and I was officially working full-time with, you know, Lockheed Martin, and we're getting into, I guess, the rest of 21 into 22. And I think it was April of 22, after the ApeCoin airdrop, I was like, dude, this is enough. I'm tired of spending 12 to 14 hours a day in corporate. you know, as an early grunt employee, just kicking cans down the road for the higher up. And, you know, I found myself like 3-4xing my yearly salary for the next few years, thanks to the ApeCoin airdrop. So I was one of the guys who saw that and said, okay, I'm going to finally take an exit. So I dumped my ApeCoin at a decent price, not $27, but not, you know, wasn't down to like the 50 cents that we see today. And I had not taken the education that I have since taken to learn what is being paid with ApeCoin DAO, with AIPs. And so that part was still sort of lost on me at the time. And I felt that I could still maintain my status within the community and then maintain the personal brand and take the ApeCoin to sort of figure out what that was going to be. It was 2022. Yeah. And then you started to see the price come down.
I mean, it makes absolute sense from my point of view. And as was there like a key moment where you said, okay, like running the calculator and seeing, okay, I get this number probably, and let's assume it's worth X, and then this is basically my salary. So was it just the hours on the working side, or was it just like, okay, it makes no sense to have like this 10 to 14 hour days and then afterwards spending the nights to stay on top of like everything, the community and the investments and stuff like that? And was there like a key moment, or was it just like the process, and then with the ApeCoin drop it was just like the final push?
So I always try to, like, you'll get this for me, man. Like, I'm always trying to be as humble as possible, because I, you know, don't necessarily come from a very wealthy background. But, you know, that being said, I really do credit a lot of my success to the people around me. And I'll shout out my brother a thousand times because of his experience in, you know, the financial world out in New York City, for telling me, you know, how to budget, plan, start to do things that, you know, I guess are basic financial literacies that I had just never really sought out in my life. And really, if I had to point to one specific turning point, I remember I was on the phone with another buddy named Conrad, who he's on X as Conquad. He's a little flame doodle. He's still like the biggest doodles maxi I know to date. And eventually I know that it'll pay off for him. But, you know, I remember I was on the phone with him and I was like, dude, so I have finally enough money to look at buying a house. Interest rates were great in the US, and I can buy a house closer to my job to make my commute, you know, way less impact on my day. That was option one. Option two was I could buy a nicer car, and then that way my commute was nice. You know, Tesla Autopilot, that was like the idea at the time, and that was the new big thing. So I could just throw the Tesla Autopilot and do that. He said, oh, the Tesla sounds nice. But James, have you thought about what if you just left the job, and then you have like, you can choose what your destiny is? And I was like, no, I hadn't thought about that, because my entire life, much like a lot of, you know, a lot of my peers in the United States and in the rest of the world, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, you receive a message and sort of a programming throughout your life that you need to go to school, you need to achieve X, and then you need to start your career, and you need to start your family, and you need to do sort of this cookie cutter approach to life that I think a lot of people never have the opportunity to try something else. And so I felt that I would, you know, feel a sense of regret if I didn't sort of chase the dream a little bit. And what that had turned into at the time was me diving fully into the Web3 community and trying to network my way into whatever, you know, opportunities that would become. And the first one I found was in a business development role for a crypto conference that was supposed to be the first of its kind in Denver, Colorado, called FutureShape 360. And so FutureShape 360, the whole ethos of the conference was to issue a token. It was a mint. And it was like a 5 Ethereum mint or something that it was meant to catch the cost of your hotel, your lodging, your flight, everything that you would need for the conference. So it was like a fully token gated conference. And it created what was meant to be the Future Shape 360. So the 360 members that had, you know, believed in this conference were meant to become sort of the movers and shakers of Web3 going forward. And I made a ton of really solid connections through that in the BD capacity, that have since, you know, brought me to crazy places like Korea Blockchain Week that I never thought I would ever, you know, go to Korea in my life. But there I was, you know, after the Future Shape thing, finding myself in Korea for the first time, you know, at Four Seasons VIP events with like the president of Yamaha and shaking hands with the head of, you know, technology for the Korean parliament or their equivalent of a Congress. And just this, I'm James, but it's a lot easier in that context to be Almana. And so I was building my personal brand throughout that process, started to get a lot of traction in that. And because I had the BD experience, my brother at that point was also looking to jump ship from corporate. And it was my brother, Conrad, and I, we launched what was later, you know, became Artemis Advisory. It was the crypto advisory firm that was meant to bring a flavor of corporate into this degen world that, you know, wanted to accomplish so many things, but didn't, I think they lacked the vernacular to achieve what they had set out to. And I think it was a little bit ahead of its time. You know, you look at today where institutions and corporates are starting to get more involved. I think had we launched the consultancy now, we would have been a little bit more successful in what we set out to do. And, you know, that's not to say we didn't achieve, you know, anything, right? Like we had a crypto yacht club party with Crypto Yacht Club out of LA. We did a sponsored event with Abra Global. They were a big crypto exchange that has since, you know, gone under. But at the time, they were slotted to get like American Express partnership for cryptocurrency onboarding. So it was like really big names, really big people. We were out there with the NFL Alumni Association, the Southern California chapter. We did an activation for NFT NYC at a nightclub called Nebula with some really cool partners, including Decentralized Investment Group out of Dubai. Since then, a lot of these names have gone, you know, completely kaput or under, kind of everyone disappeared after the bull. But one of the really cool things that came out of it was we were able to bring the Barry Fay Collection, which is a collection of music intellectual property and, you know, platinum records, signed guitars, like really cool pianos from what I believe to be the greatest promoter in the last 50 years in the United States of America named Barry Fay. So he's since passed, but you can Google Barry Fay and you'll go down the absolute rabbit hole. But we were able to tokenize some of his family's foundation's collection and list those assets on Americana Marketplace, which again is another one that has since gone by the wayside. And so we set out to achieve a bunch of stuff. I think we achieved what we set out to achieve. You know, we even did our own Miami NFT Week pop-up. It was an artist showcase with a bunch of, you know, crypto artists that at the time, you know, had come from places like Disney and Marvel and were now doing 3D NFTs to cut their way into the crypto space. We worked with Warhol, who has since done, you know, Paris Hilton gifts at her birthday party this last year. And so a lot of these people that we'd worked with had gone on to do really cool things. And so we stamped our name in the space to some extent. But we realized that, you know, we were a little bit ahead of our time. We weren't paying everyone's bills as much as we needed to be. And so, you know, everyone kind of, we went our separate ways, but the lessons were still learned. And that, you know, was a lot of my social capital, a lot of my personal brand capital that at the time I had looked to team build around Artemis, right? Which I think I had never really taken the opportunity to seriously look at my personal brand and look at, you know, what was possible for that in what, you know, eventually became Mono here. And one of the catalysts for that change really was the MBA or Made by Apes program that Yuga came out with through Sassy Labs, which is an entirely other thread of drama. Because if you look at what has happened with Sassy Labs and the MBA program in the last 6 months, you've seen, you know, Josh just, you know, completely doxed everyone's businesses. At that point, I was already doxed because I was, you know, doing the Artemis thing. So I wasn't personally affected by that, but I'm very glad to see how Yuga stepped up and brought everything in house and, you know, has continued to uplift the voices of the MBA community. And I like to believe that that's the only MBA I'll ever need. So things are going good at this point. I've set up the MBA. We're getting towards, you know, timeline wise, we finished 2022, we're getting into 2023. And right before Hong Kong Ape Fest, as I mentioned, I think before we got on this call, I had started to, you know, brainstorm what I wanted to do and what my MBA was going to be. And Mono spawned out of that, right? Because, and going back to your initial point, how is Mono separate from El Mono? Where is James in all this? Well, James is the business owner, right? James represents the personal brand El Mono, but El Mono wanted to make something that was physical. Like I wanted to be able to hold something, right? I thought that was cool. I was tired of just having this digital stuff, right? I thought it was really cool to create something tangible, good. You know, going back to my construction days, I wanted to have something I could hold, something that I made. But what did I also want to bring to the Mono community was the idea of utility, right? Going back to Shiba, you know, going back to the Board Ape Yacht Club, what got me so excited about these projects beyond the scope of the community was the idea that there was utility baked into that. And so with Mono, over the past year, we've really set out to build utility for the idea of the modern nomad. So you go to all these crypto conferences, you start traveling the world and doing all these cool things and living this life that maybe you never thought that you would find yourself in this place. I didn't want to create something exclusionary and token gated where folks that, you know, were still potentially graduating college or still trying to figure out what they wanted to do with their life, could see Mono, which is, you know, available on TikTok shop. We're selling on Instagram. We're on Facebook. You know, we're trying to get to the normies a little bit and let them know that we exist, and not feel like it's just another, you know, opportunity to rep somebody else's Bored Ape IP. And so Mono still tries to pay homage to the OG El Mono here, you know, with the Fez Ape logo, really cool Ben Davis stylized logo here. This is actually from Luther Brown, who is one of the first artists we work with, but going back to the Artemis days and our artist showcase. And so, you know, one of the core values of Mono really is that thoughtfulness and trying to elevate the voices of, you know, artists and community members that, you know, maybe still are working the Web2 job. You know, they're still trying to break into that space. And I wanted to create an opportunity to help, you know, support those people that have always supported me and always been in my corner throughout my journey in Web3. And so Luther's one of those guys. Luther, if you see this, man, thank you so much for everything you've done. And then we'll continue to do with Mono. And I look forward to, you know, having this conversation with you later on. But, you know, bringing it back to Mono. So
maybe for people that are probably just listening and not watching right now, can you just describe what Mono is in and what the mission behind Mono is in for people that don't know it yet? And second question to that, you mentioned that, okay, MBA was like kind of the trigger to think about doing something with the brand, and then the kind of process where you said, okay, I want to have something physical. And was there like specific points where you said, okay, this is it's a must that Web3 is somehow involved, that token are involved, or that utility is involved? I mean, you could have just produced I don't know, pens and then just sell it. Take us a little bit into this founding process a little bit. So first question, what is it? What is the mission and of your brand? And the second question, so the process, how you define what products you want to make.
The mission for Mono is to establish Mono as the go-to brand for modern nomads. So step one was defining what the heck a modern nomad is. And then, you know, that was an entire journey, right? Because a lot of the modern nomads that I was meeting were crypto natives. Like I wasn't going to tech conferences. I like to say that the digital nomad is a little bit of an antiquated idea. I don't discount that there were folks that, you know, were in the dot-com boom, you know, the PayPal class, you know, Peter Thiel's, the Elon Musk's, those guys, Zuckerberg's, you know, they had their exits. They did the tech thing. And they've, you know, since done the jet setting lifestyle. Jack Dorsey's still doing his thing. I know he's doing Warpcaster now, but he's still out there traveling the world and doing yoga holistically. Like it's a cool lifestyle, but I think that for a lot of folks that are in that Gen Z and that sort of Gen Alpha bracket, you know, looking at like little cousins that I have, they think it's a really cool lifestyle that they can start to achieve and work towards. And I really draw parallels to like Supreme, right? Like at when Supreme was starting, that their goal and their cult following, I think, really spawned in the younger generations because they felt proud to wear Supreme. Like it was a stamp of a counterculture movement, sort of a streetwear brand. And that to me sort of became the ethos of the modern nomad, right? Like let's push back on this idea that we need to be a cookie cutter life and we just have to, you know, buy the house and go close to work and then start the family. Like it's a lot cooler if you can find a remote gig, which thanks to the pandemic as a huge catalyst for all of this, right, has been a lot more ubiquitous. The 4-day work week even, you know, taking a lot of that from Europe, you know, shout out to you guys for doing it first, but that was one of the last initiatives I was in charge of at Lockheed Martin, was rolling everything into a 4-day work week. We were moving everything online. And so that was still fresh in my mind. And I wanted to create a vehicle for folks to identify with that. But what was that going to be, right? If it wasn't supposed to be exclusionary to the non-crypto natives, I felt that the most tactile, tangible way to do that was to drop a t-shirt, throw a logo on it, and make sure that it wasn't just a gilded blank. That so many other people were creating merch, right? Everyone's doing merch. I wanted to do apparel. And when one of the people that I had met at one of these conferences, his name was also James, James Costa, I'll shout him out on this. He since is doing some really cool stuff with, you know, just really high ticket apparel, really custom stuff, with a lot of his supply chain. And it's just like I'll use the word bougie, like it's nice luxury stuff. Right. And so I wanted to sort of capture that feel. And you know, going back to the Artemis days, one of our advisors that we brought on is named Nick Champagne. That's his name, right? That's his thing, right? And he runs Status Luxury Group, which is a really, you know, high end concierge service for ultra high net worth and high net worth individuals. And so his flavor and introduction that he gave us to what luxury means was also still fresh in my mind. So I felt like I had a little bit of a competitive advantage in having relationships with people like James Costa, having relationships with people like Nick, who, you know, brought us into the Ned Nomad in New York City to do fireside chats with VaynerX and Grayscale in that Artemis capacity. And so a lot of these, you know, like I think a good way to bring this up is that there's an attunement to luxury. And I think that is lost on a lot of people who haven't experienced it. I'm very blessed, again, you know, having taken the profits to be able to go and explore some of the Amans of the world, if you will, and dine at some of the finest restaurants in the world. Because if you see my Instagram, I'll have to share it with you after this, but it's just food. Like I just food blog on Instagram. It's just like all the restaurants. And that's how I read my history. If I look at my personal Instagram, I can scroll through and I can tell you, oh, this is in Korea. This is Mosu. This is when I was in Korea Blockchain Week. And instead of having like a reel of me talking about it, I can see all of that in the food and I can see the plate and remember the flavors. And again, going back to the idea of something that I can touch is just so cool to me. And so that's where the idea of Mono, you know, sort of came to a head, and it became an apparel brand at the beginning. But I didn't want to just be an apparel brand. And so since we've reformatted the idea of the Modern Nomad, we just came out with our full-fledged collection, the Modern Nomad collection. That's live now for a limited time. And still have, you know, a few of the bamboo t-shirts left. And you know, I hope to bring some of them with me at ApeFest. Would love to get you one day. But that was the mission. Was like, okay, so going back to ApeFest Hong Kong, I had a bunch of these t-shirts. I didn't make the bodega sale because I had some supply chain issues that I was still figuring out how to, you know, get stuff made, cut and sew style, have, you know, a network of suppliers that I could call on for this. And I remember I showed up to a Bored Chili event Shout out Vera, one of the greatest community builders in the Bored Ape Yacht Club. She had, you know, she's doing amazing things. And she has been sort of someone I've always looked up to in the space and always tried to make it to every Bored Chili event that I can. And at the time in Hong Kong, I remember I showed up to a Bored Chili event with like five t-shirts in one of the Hong Kong ape bags. And I was like, I was nervous, dude, because I was like, everyone's showing up in like really bougie threads. Like Vera's events are always hot, you know, high tier stuff. And there I am with my ape bag trying to find people to give out t-shirts to. And one of the people I look up to a ton in fashion is a guy named Virgil Abb. So if you don't know, Virgil, once upon a time, he was just some guy in LA that was trying to build a brand and was just going to parties in LA. And then one of the parties, you know, he would go to is Drake's parties, because him and Drake were just in the same social circles. And that's how he initially built up his brand, was by giving away pieces to Drake's of the world. And that sort of elevated his status of who he was and the brand that he was building. And I'm not here to, you know, again, I'm a humble guy. Like, I'm not trying to say I'm Virgil Abloh, but I know that that had worked for him. And so that was something that I wanted to sort of try and bring out. So, you know, the retail price for, you know, this Bamboo Blend t-shirt and is a little bit higher ticket, but I felt like it was, you know, regardless of how much investment had gone into the product, that it was something that I felt confident and proud to give out as a gift. And everyone that I had, you know, found at that event, you know, shout out J-Bond, shout out Vera, shout out Sander. Sander was actually the very first model for Mono. He was, you might see him on the Instagram, but he was there at the Vera party. And I remember I met Sander. I was like, dude, I have an XL. I only have one XL. You're like an XL guy. Like we should do a photo shoot if you're okay with it. And he said, yeah, man, yeah, I'll put it on. So he takes his shirt off right there in the event. And like his wife, I remember his wife was there and she's like, what are you doing, dude? I remember he's like, well, it's Bored Ape stuff. Don't worry. It's okay. And so he takes off his shirt, he puts on the Mono tee. We got a really cool pick of Sander there on the rooftop. And I remember he touched the material of it, which is this really cool bamboo poly blend that's like just really stretchy, breathable material. You can like see me through this. It's like just lightweight. It's a jersey cut fit, so it's kind of a loose, longer sleeve, but it's sort of a billowy kind of layering piece, which to me is exactly what I needed. Because I like to travel light. And that's one of the other things that fits into the modern nomad. As I was discovering sort of what that meant, it's like get up and go, but it doesn't have to be a Mons and Michelin star restaurants. It could just be, hey, I just want to go. But I want something that's quality that I can, you know, I'm okay making a little bit of an investment in because I recognize what the brand is trying to do. And that sort of became the first Mono product in the Bamboo Blend t-shirt. And that's how I found my way to Estonia, because Sander said, hey, dude, let's keep in touch. I'm putting together this thing called Banana Conference next year. Would love to figure out how we can work together on that. And so that's how I ended up in Estonia earlier this year for my first Banana Conference and started to network in the Euro crypto scene. And thanks to Sander and a lot of the, you know, folks there at Banana Conference, I got slotted for my first speaking role. This time, which was a big deal for me because this time I was not, you know, James as a part of Artemis. I was El Mono doing Mono, and that's why I'm here and that's what I'm there to talk about. And so it was a really empowering moment for me to not only be talking about something more tangible, but to be able to, you know, be the smiling face and kiss the babies and shake the hands and represent something that's a physical product that is me. And so I'm still, you know, very proud of that achievement to this day. And that's really what I wanted to convey with Mono, the product. But again, I still felt that I wasn't differentiating my brand enough. And that's where I wanted to start to bake in the idea of utility. One of the current strategic partners for Mono is Ordinals Goods. They're a real world asset marketplace on Bitcoin Network. And I met at the time the CTO Talon in Banana Conference. He had seen me on stage after the Made by Apes panel that Sander sort of slapped on at the end for day two. And it was me, Chantal, and Dim, who like are hitters, like just absolute killers in the space. I saw you had Chantal on here. You know everything about her. Like she's just a legend. And then Dim, of course, Metaverse Steward, it was at Banana Conference. He made the big announcement for ApeChain, and at, you know, Banana Conference, he did, you know, like you had F1 start to come out. So it was like, and then there's me, you know, I'm like, whoa, what is going on here? But also at the same time, it was like, okay, so if this is where the brand is, and this is where, you know, El Mono is, this is where Mono is, I have an opportunity to, you know, convey that message, but I wanted to bake something in that was not just, you know, an apparel brand, right? And so with Ordinals Goods, we've been able to take 20 of the original Bamboo Blend t-shirts and list those as real world assets on Bitcoin. So that was step one. That was real utility. It was a Web3 play, and we've actually sold a few on Bitcoin. So it's awesome to get paid in Bitcoin for some t-shirts. And so you can get the real world asset NFT along with the t-shirt. And for anybody listening that, you know, has received a gift of a Mono Bamboo Blend t-shirt, if you're interested in the real world asset, just, you know, DMs are always open. Just hit me up and we can get you squared away. But still it wasn't enough, right? So what was one thing that had really jumped out in my personal journey with crypto and this idea of sort of creating a counterculture to go against this cookie cutter lifestyle that everyone feels that they need to fall into? You know, maybe it's just the generational pressure of our parents, whatever it is, to avoid the lifestyle commentary. I think that, it really comes back to financial literacy. And, you know, maybe some socioeconomic framework within that. And so the other partnership that we've been able to lock in with Mono is with a 501c3. It's a charity that my buddy Nick Champagne runs out of New York called Juice Box Project. And so what we're doing with them is, you know, 10% of every order that you place with Mono gets directly donated to the Juice Box Project. And they help empower young entrepreneurs who and folks from, you know, I guess a lower socioeconomic bracket out there in New York City who definitely, you know, could do better than take out a six-figure loan to still not know what they want to do at the end of their college career. And so they work with these kids to do mentorship, to help with funding once the mentorship progresses to a certain point, you know, help them connect with other entrepreneurs and really build up, you know, the idea of what's possible in today's world, especially with things like AI and all these crazy tools that I think are out there. You just need someone to sort of help you out and then find these things. And so that was the one that I'm just like really passionate about because I was able to give back. And that's a huge part of it for me is being able to give back to people who, you know, may be on a similar path as me. Now, that to me still wasn't enough. I was like, what am I doing? Like this is, there has to be more, right? And so I started really looking at what was missing in the framework of the modern nomad. And one of the things that jumped out to me next was health insurance. So you leave the corporate world, you have like this travel lifestyle you're starting to do. You can't easily find a global health insurance provider that's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. Right. So I did my research. I connected with a brand called Genki out of Germany, and they have Nomad Health Insurance, where you can pay a really solid rate that we can hook you up with as a Mono utility. Right. So you get an order, and I've drafted a really cool email template that I send out to everyone that places an order with Mono. So you get your, you know, health insurance code. You get to know you're helping out with the 501c3, and you have the option if you do the BBT to go with a real world asset. Now, again, I was like, what's missing, right? So what do you need when you're going abroad and you have like, you know, this idea that you want to build or whatever, you're doing the crypto thing, you're going to need secure internet. That's a must. You got to have your connection, right? So we're also partnering with ExpressVPN to provide, you know, an offer code to give you your first 30 days for free. And then, you know, you can sign up or choose to cancel your subscription, whatever you want to do. The idea is not to subscribe to Mono yet, but it's about supporting the modern nomad lifestyle. So we can hook you up with a VPN. You can stay connected anywhere in the world, always have access. You're covered with the health insurance, and then you're also able to give back to the community. And so as those utility frameworks have come to bear, the idea of the modern nomad has also been a lot more solidified. And then that idea is long-term to really create Mono as a, you know, globally recognized brand that has its claim to the travel space and working sort of with that cult following from the younger generations to let everybody know that, hey, you can choose what you want to do with your life. And Mono is there to help support that lifestyle if you want to.
So yeah, it's like going full circle on the mission as well. And it's so inspiring just to listen to you. I think that's the episode where like I've asked the least questions, but it's so inspiring to listen to your story and your chain of thoughts and how like this became like just mono became the idea from, hey, I want to do something and I want to have something physical to touch, to this kind of concept where you can tell that it's the exact opposite of like this fast fashion trend, right? Where you just buy a shirt for a few bucks and then you can wear it for, I don't know, five times and then you have to throw it away. And you building something that where modern nomads can identify with, where they get utility, where like Web3 is baked in. And I think we can tell that it's just the beginning. So there's probably a lot of things coming up. ApeFest Lisbon is next. So it's just like 1 month to go. Have you planned something for Lisbon and for people listening right now that are inspired as I am and hooked as I am? So where can they find you? Where can they like, should they wait for Lisbon? Can they buy already? How can they like connect to you? So yeah, give us a little bit of what's planned next and where can I start as a customer?
Yeah. So on all socials, TikTok, Instagram, and X, Mono Nomads, MONO Nomads, all one word. That's the handle. Check us out. Stay up to date on the content. We will, I'll send it out on the X account. Everyone that wants to jump in, we have a Telegram channel. If that's easiest to just jump into Telegram, that's where things are at now. The Modern Nomad collection, our first full collection is up. I'm rocking right here. You'll see this. This is crypto and passport stamps hat. This is this one's not available online, in this specific white colorway. I wanted to get something that's only for me. And I thought that was a big part of it, but we still have the Mono Monkey decal. This was an alternate logo. Fun fact, this was the one that, I mentioned Luther Brown. This was the one that his daughter, who's also she's going to be a great artist one day. She really liked this logo. And so I took that and put that on the side. And then we have our Mono decal, which is an alternate logo idea. But I didn't want to not use any of the designs I'm sitting on. So there are a few, designs that are still in the repository that haven't been, brought to the light of day yet. Specifically, the Mono Lovers collection is coming up. It's going to be some swimwear, and I'll bring some of that on the rack in Lisbon. So you'll have a chance to see some of the products that haven't hit the marketplace yet. We're also going to, going back to Ordinals Goods, we're working on a specific Ordinals Goods Mono collaboration collection that's coming out here soon. And then, got some other stuff coming. But right now, the Modern Nomad collection is up. It's on the website. The other one I'll shout out is we did, I wanted to bring it back to the club, dude. The club is what started it all. So we're doing a pre-order that's live now until, we're at the 11th. So I'm closing it on the 14th. And then the price is going to change. The design will stay the same. But right now we're doing a promo rate for apes, mutants, and members of the Bored Ape Kennel Club, because I didn't want to leave the dogs out this time. So if you're a holder of any of those assets, go on the website, dressmono.com, and customize your very own ApeFest Lisbon hat. We left, 16 characters here that are, completely yours. It'll say Ape Custom on it. Or if you, opt in, we can do, Fabian Zentel or Captain Kazoo or whatever your ape name is, Captain Trippy, PP Man, if you're watching this, I made you one and I'm bringing it to you at ApeFest. That's happening. Illa, I got you too, bro. That's coming your way. And so there's just, a lot of cool opportunities to leverage the club, and I wanted to bring it back. But yes, we will be as Mono at Marvilla for a seller's booth, and we'll also be at the Bodega. So you'll have the chance to see some of the products. You'll have the chance to buy some of the products there in person. I'll bring as many as I can in my suitcase. This time I've already talked with Yuga. It's approved that I can bring my suitcase. So we're going to be there. And it'll look forward to seeing as many people as I can just, stop by.
I'm so looking forward to meet in Lisbon. And yeah, just again, it's so the whole, like your personal story, but also what you're building. It's so inspiring. It's great. Keep on doing that. Two last questions, very like rapid fire one. So Mono is inspired by the modern nomad. If you could pack one single item for a trip around the world, what would you take and why?
It's the BBT. So fun fact, my record. So after Hong Kong, I have a buddy who he also jet sets and travels around, and we try to sync up in different places in the world when our schedules let us. And at the time, he had met me in Hong Kong for Ape Fest, shout out Jumper. And we both were looking at our tickets, and we could have gone, you know, our separate ways. He was going to go back to New York. I was going to go back to LA to see some family for Thanksgiving. And we looked at the tickets, and then we looked at the tickets to Japan, and the tickets to Japan were like $100 from Hong Kong on Hong Kong Express. And it's like, dude, we've never been to Japan. Let's just go to Japan. And so we took like the three or four Bamboo Blend t-shirts I had left, and went to Japan, and we're there in Japan for like a month after Hong Kong. We did, you know, Tokyo, we did Osaka, he went to Hiroshima. I went to Kyoto instead because I wanted to see Kyoto. And then we met up back in Tokyo, and he went on, and then I went up to Hakone before I went back to Tokyo, and eventually went back to see the family for Thanksgiving out in LA. But where does it come back to? The BBT. So I rocked this sucker because I couldn't find laundry, or I was too lazy to do laundry, or whatever. I was having too much fun in Japan. So I've rocked this thing for like 3 or 4 days straight. And because of the Bamboo Blend, it did not smell. Like I'm telling you, it is moisture wicking and it is odor friendly. And you can rock this sucker anywhere in the world. And it is an essential need for any time I go traveling.
Awesome. I mean, it was a easy question, I think, but it shows it's field approved, right? It's action approved. So yeah, one more reason to get one. Last question. So if you can give just one tip, recommendation, message to our audience right now, so it can be anything, not related to Web3, can be related to like traveling or just life. So what, like the Tim Ferriss billboard question, right? What would you write on your billboard? What would the message be you want to shout out now?
You just follow that dream, like whatever it is, whether it's, you know, whether it's your own MBA brand, whether it's, you know, your own consumer product, whether it's just, you know, creating your own personal brand and starting to build that up, just go for it. Like you never know what's on the other side. Sometimes the scariest thing is taking a leap, but if you're following that dream and just going for it, you'll look back someday and be really happy about it, that you did.
I second that. So 100%. And James Almono, thank you so much for telling your story, for sharing some insights, for just being on the show. And as I said, I'm so looking forward. I'm a huge fan. I'm so looking forward to meet you in Lisbon. And yeah, we'll keep in touch.
100%. Take care.
Take care. Peace and out. Thank you for listening, friends. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. It's probably actually the episode where I asked the fewest questions, but I didn't want to interrupt James in his stories. And I think we can all take something away from it. It's such an inspirational story with so much energy, so much work also put into it. And you can see that you really can take life in your own hands and do stuff that really excites you. So I'm a big fan, and I looking forward to meet Almono and probably you in Lisbon. So if you're coming to Lisbon to ApeFest, let me know. Let's meet. And until then, please show some love and just click on the profiles. If you're not following Almono, please do so now and look into what they are building. It's so awesome. All the links to the profiles you can find in the show notes below. And if you want to follow me, please go on X or just subscribe to the newsletter. Link also right below. So thank you again so much for listening. See you in Lisbon or in the next episode. Until then, peace and out.